Welcome, and thank you all for standing by. At this time, all participants will be in a listen-only mode until the question-and-answer portion of today's conference. During the question-and-answer portion, if you would like to ask a question, you may use star one. Please, as a reminder, limit your questions to one question and a follow-up question. I would now like to turn the conference over to Mr. Benjamin Haynes. Thank you. You may begin.
Thank you, Ivy, and thank you all for joining us for today's briefing. We are joined by Dr. Jonathan Merman, Director of CDC's National Center for HIV, Viral Hepatitis, STD, and TB Prevention, which is CDC's lead center for monitoring and addressing school-based health. We are also joined by Dr. Kathleen Ethier, Director of CDC's Division of Adolescent and School Health. Both will provide opening remarks before taking your questions. I will now turn the call over to Dr. Merman.
Benjamin. So good afternoon, and thank you for joining us to discuss important new CDC data that provide new and actionable information and insight into the state of youth mental health in America. So for over 2 years, the COVID-19 pandemic has challenged our nation, not just with the tragedy of losing over a million lives, but also the day-to-day pandemic-related disruptions that have been life-altering and often isolating for youth. Although the nation has adapted, this has been a hard experience, especially so for our youth. And our youth have had to adjust to different social, educational, and family circumstances while they are growing up. And these experiences, both good and bad, have affected their physical and mental well-being. So worsening mental health of youth was a growing public health issue even before America had ever heard of COVID-19. Data from high school students across the country already signaled the problem, with more students saying they felt sad and hopeless, and more students attempting suicide in the decade prior to the pandemic. We know from other research that youth with poor mental health are more likely to struggle with school and grades, decision-making, and their physical health. Furthermore, mental health problems in youth are often associated with other behavioral risks, such as drug use, experiencing violence, and higher-risk sexual behaviors. And these problems can have lasting negative effects well into adulthood. An existing youth mental health crisis in America was exacerbated during the COVID-19 pandemic, and our hope is that it can be turned around because there are solutions to the problems we will be discussing today. With funding from the CARES Act, CDC designed the Adolescent Behaviors and Experiences Survey so that we could better understand the various threats, both physical and mental, that our children have been facing during COVID-19. In 2021, we conducted a voluntary survey of a nationally representative sample of public and private high school students from across the country. Many of the findings are deeply troubling, some with long-term consequences. And I'll now turn the mic over to Dr. Ethier to discuss in more detail the findings and recommended actions.
Thank you, Dr. Merman. Our data make it clear that young people experience significant disruption and adversity during the pandemic and are experiencing a mental health crisis. We found that over a third of students reported stress, anxiety, and depression during the pandemic, and 44% of students said that in the previous year, they had felt so persistently sad and hopeless that they were unable to engage in their regular activities. This data and others like it show us that young people and their families have been under incredible levels of stress during the pandemic. Our data exposes cracks and uncovers an important layer of insight into the extreme disruptions that some youth have encountered during the pandemic. For example, youth in the survey reported that in their homes, 55% experienced emotional abuse, 11% had experienced physical abuse, 29% reported that a parent or other adult in their homes lost a job, and 24% said they went hungry because there was not enough food. And though the COVID-19 pandemic has negatively affected all youth in some way, it has not affected all youth equally. Today's data show that some particularly unsettling findings for female students and lesbian, gay, bisexual, and questioning students, including that 74% of lesbian, gay, and bisexual youth and 63% of female youth who reported emotional abuse in the home, and 26% of lesbian, gay, and bisexual youth and 12% of female youth attempted suicide, both at much higher levels than heterosexual students and male students. Although we did not ask a question about gender identity in this survey, Previous research tells us that transgender young people experience greater levels of violence, more stigma, and are more likely to have mental health problems and suicidal thoughts and behaviors than their peers. So we would expect to see potentially more extreme outcomes for transgender youth. Given that today is Transgender Day of Visibility, I especially want to call attention to what we've seen in previous studies as very significant outcomes among transgender youth. In this survey for the first time, we also asked students if they had ever experienced racism at school, either before or during the pandemic. We found that more than one-third of students said that they had been treated badly or unfairly at school because of their race or ethnicity. The highest reports were among Asian students, Black students, and students of multiple races. As many of you know, CDC declared racism a serious public threat, and our data helped show us why. Students who experienced racism at school were more likely to report they also experienced poor mental health than those who had not experienced racism. So what can be done to support youth and improve mental health? Our data also speak powerfully to the importance of schools in mitigating the impact of the pandemic. We've long known that youth who feel more connected in their schools, that is, they feel safe, that their peers and adults in school care about them, have more positive health and well-being. Decades of research have demonstrated that youth who feel connected at school are less likely to experience negative health outcomes related to mental health, substance use, violence, and sexual risk, and that this protection that connectedness offers can last into adulthood. In the ABES survey, we found that youth who felt more connected to people at their schools had better mental health and were much less likely to report that they felt sad or hopeless, considered attempting suicide, or attempted suicide than those who did not feel connected. Conversely, students who did not feel connected to people at school had worse mental health. However, we also saw that youth who experienced racism and lesbian, gay, bisexual, and questioning youth were less likely to feel connected to people at their school. There is much that can be done to make sure that LGBTQ youth and youth from racial and ethnic minority groups feel safe, supported, and connected in their schools. Although our latest findings present an often grim picture and there is much work to be done, it is clear that right now young people need all the support we can give them. Our new findings reinforce an evidence-based path forward. CDC's What Works in Schools program incorporates specific strategies that schools can use to help all students feel safer and more supported. Improving the health and well-being of LGBTQ students is an essential component of that work. School policies and practices designed to support LGBTQ youth lead to improvements in mental health and suicide-related behaviors. When schools are less toxic for youth at increased risk for severe outcomes, schools are less toxic for everyone. And I will now hand it back to Dr. Merman to wrap up before we take your questions.
Thank you. You know, the nation's youth were experiencing a growing mental health crisis before COVID-19, and it's worsened during the pandemic. Because schools play an important protective role in young people's lives, we need to do all we can to support educational institutions and their effective policies. The findings we presented today highlight complex issues, however, and kids, parents, and schools cannot address them alone. The impact of COVID-19 will be felt for many years with devastating consequences. Together, we can mitigate its negative effects, increase health equity, and create a healthier future for all youth. Thank you for joining us today to hear about some of these data, and I'll now turn the mic back to you, Benjamin.
Thank you, Dr. Merman, and thank you, Dr. Ethier. Ivy, we are now ready to take questions.
Absolutely. At this time, if you would like to ask a question, please unmute your phone, hit star one, and record your name clearly when prompted. As a reminder, please limit yourself to just one question and a follow-up. Looks like our first question comes from Erica Edwards from NBC News. Your line is open.
Hey, thank you so much. I had a question about the emotional abuse part of the survey, specifically about potential trends. Does this report mirror what was happening inside homes even before the stress of the pandemic, or is there data to suggest that this kind of behavior sort of increased during the pandemic? And if so, can you just speak a little bit more about potential reasons why this was occurring through lockdown? Thank you.
Thank you so much for the question. There is no way to know specifically whether our findings reflect something new due to the pandemic or existing levels of abuse from prior to the pandemic. I think what it does point out, however, is what we have to do now in order to support the youth who have experienced abuse in their homes. So we know that we can, you know, really support schools in addressing those issues, and we know we can support schools in looking out for potentially youth who are experiencing abuse in the home to direct them towards services that they need.
Next question, please.
Our next question comes from Mike Stobie from the Associated Press. Please go ahead.
Hi, thank you for taking my question. Dr. Merman, you said that many of the findings are deeply troubling and some with long-term consequences. Could you say a little bit more about what the anticipated long-term consequences are? And also, could you all talk a little bit about, there was already a worsening trend. What was the reason for the worsening trend in adolescent mental health before the pandemic? Thank you.
So Mike, some of the you know, immediate consequences have long-term effects. If both mental health as a youth is correlated with mental health as an adult, because not only attempted suicides, but also the youth sometimes actually die from suicide, which can affect families, and then some of the other health effects, whether they're the physical effects, you know, STIs, other things that can occur more frequently during youth can have long-term effects as adults. So I would say that some of the risk behaviors that happen can have direct health effects immediately, but also sometimes the mental health effects can have long-term consequences over time. And as Dr. Etheridge highlighted, you know, all children have been affected by the COVID-19 pandemic in some way, but not all equally. And because of that, some of the youth are more experience more serious effects, and those effects can last for time.
Mike, to just follow up on the second part of your question, we've been looking, you know, really closely at the data, the trends that we saw prior to the pandemic. The fact that adolescent girls and LGBTQ youth consistently saw higher levels of mental health problems and suicidal thoughts and behaviors prior to the pandemic, which we also saw in the ABES data, suggests that certain populations of youth may be either experiencing stigma, things like bullying in their environments may be more adversely affected by those issues. And so I think, you know, some of the same factors that are related to mental health prior to the pandemic are also related to mental health issues during the pandemic. The role of social isolation, I think, is really key. So to the degree to which young people feel connected, definitely positively enhances their mental health. So prior to the pandemic, to whatever degree young people were feeling isolated from each other or from important sources of support, that also, I think, was exacerbated during the pandemic.
And I would say there's a large literature about adverse childhood experiences that show long-term effects, negative effects, whether it's from, you know, stress, anxiety, that a lot of the health we see over time can be tied back to experiences as youth.
Next question, please.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Julie Steenhuisen from Reuters. Please go ahead.
Yes, thanks for taking my call. So we have, you know, there have been a lot of articles written about, specifically about the lockdowns and how they've affected students and the at-home learning. And what I'm trying to understand is, you know, does this study tell us something new about the way that the pandemic response affected youth mental health, because I think people are going to want to read that into this paper. And I just want to make sure, you know, we were able to really say something specifically about the pandemic response and mental health. Thanks.
Sure. I think previous studies definitely showed that young people who experienced virtual learning were likely to experience negative mental health effects. We did not look at that relationship in this survey. So we don't differentiate between young people who were learning at home versus those who were in learning in person. I think what the study does show is the levels of disruption, the degree to which families were experiencing stress, and how the impact of that stress on young people. I also think it's important to really focus on how we're going to address this crisis moving forward. And I think what this shows us is that regardless of how schools addressed the pandemic kind of individually, the important thing to note is that there are really important strategies that schools can use to address mental health moving forward.
Next question, please.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Solomon Wilson from KERA News Dallas. Your line is open.
Thank you very much. Thank you so much for taking my question. My question is, since you have found that a lot of the LGBTQ plus youth also is predominantly POC, and like you mentioned, Asian and Black, for example, and multi-races, what are some of your recommended plans to tackle the solution? And would you say that it is going to be tackled in the school, or more so would you be wanting to tackle this in the home with the adults that are inflicting the abuse reported? Thank you.
I think it's really important to recognize that this survey was a window into what was happening at a particular point in time. And so what we can take from it is that youth are in crisis. Many experienced a variety of disruptions, but also including abuse in the home. And we now need solutions to address those problems. Some of those solutions can absolutely be undertaken in schools, but this is going to take all of us. I think that there are solutions that communities can take. There are things we can do to try to support families. There is no aspect of society that should not be working together to try to support our young people as they move forward. We have some very specific recommended strategies to improve connectedness in schools and are certainly here and ready to help schools as they try to help youth. But I don't think that this is just a one-place solution.
Ivy, we have time for two more questions.
Absolutely. And for those on the phone, if there is another question, please use star one. Our next question comes from Ryan Chatelaine from Spectrum News. Please go ahead.
Hi, I just had a question about, you mentioned 55% suffered emotional abuse, 11% physical abuse. I was just wondering, for context, what were those numbers pre-pandemic, if you have them?
Thanks for the question. We have never asked those questions in our regular nationally representative surveys, the Youth Risk Behavior Survey. So this is the first time that we've asked this question. I think it's the first available data for a nationally representative survey during the pandemic. So we can't compare to levels prior to the pandemic. Other surveys have asked these types of questions. I know there's data from 2011 and 2014 from other surveys, but those are not surveys that we've conducted, so we can't really compare.
Last question, please.
Sorry, I was muted. I currently have no other questions in queue.
Okay, if there are no other questions, I'd like to thank you all for joining us. I'd like to thank Dr. Merman and Dr. Eath here for their time. If you have further questions, please contact the Maine Media Office at 404-639-3286, or you can email media@cdc.gov. Thank you.
Thank you all for participating in today's conference. You may disconnect your line and enjoy the rest of your day.